remember him as a friend, as a teacher, as a very profound poet who helped me to understand a bit of humanity much better than I could.
I remember that most of all, there's a fountain of youth. He brought a love life that went very deeply. And this kind of person longer than us. I hope love is not known as well in his lifetime as he should have been. Though this may come late, I hope this changes and everyone gets to know God.
Well, in the feeling of sadness and emptiness, the campus is a good deal more empty today than it was a few days ago. His loss was very significant for us.
I don't really know how I feel, except, of course, you know, we all are going to miss him tremendously. But there are some things that we can do, such as we've already begun to set up a scholarship fund that will, we hope will benefit young writers. And that kind of thing we've been doing. Anything that will point out the qualities that Robert Hayden has and had to have. I'm saying has, you know, if not had, because I think they're ongoing, is worthy of being done, because it was important to him. The people were important to him, and he was always trying to do everything he could for young people or anybody who had a need while he went on with his work. And the reason I'm saying has, because we have all of his books and all of the written things that are inspired, will continue to inspire people.
Robert Hayden, if you were to meet him, you might not know that this man, nurtured in Detroit's ghetto, has become the poet for all Americans. Hayden is at once a great man and a modest one. This man never has and never will be one who takes himself so seriously as to forget that he, for all of us, is one small part of humanity. Robert Hayden is truly America's poet laureate. So, I want to read the poem, Scenes of Variation. I think that those of you, and this I'm dedicating to the graduating class, there is a wonder and a sense of mystery in life, and sometimes we lose that, but there is something beyond and behind all that we do. And in the prayer this morning, I thought that this was touched upon and that it would not be inappropriate to read this poem. Theme Variations. Fossil, future, method, man, fire and water, earth and air. All things alter, even as I behold. All things alter, the stranger said. Alter, become a something more, a something less. Are the resolute shadows of a changing permanence. Are not, are same and other, the stranger said. I sense, he said, the leaping rush, the flower cleansing, flickering at the edge of things. I sighed from the corner of my eye upon the strict meaning of reality. There is, he said, the imminence. A turn to curiosity, all I know, in change of light to rainbow darkness, from God waylays us and empowers.
I had an opportunity to talk to Hayden about his poetry in a more relaxed atmosphere following the commencement exercises at Grand Valley State College.
You said something very interesting about life, that is, a poet has to know something about life. How is that represented in your work?
Well, maybe I ought to talk about something I've done recently. There's going to be an exhibit of Dick Lawrence's paintings
John Brown at the Detroit Institute, and I was commissioned to write a poem for the series, to appear in the exhibition catalog. And I had read about John Brown and written a poem about him years and years ago. But now that I've changed, my style has changed. I wasn't satisfied with the early version. And so I had to set about writing something for the exhibition. And I studied the pictures, and I did some more reading, and then I spent a great deal of time thinking about John Brown, just what he represented, what kind of man he must have been, and I tried to understand what drove him. And I reached a point where I stopped reading and did a lot of thinking and looked at the figure, had a chance to see the pictures again, and eventually I got the poem together, and it called for a considerable amount of work.
Speaking of John Brown, you did a poem about one of his contemporaries, friends, and fellow activists in the abolition struggle, Freddie Nelson.
Yes.
Could you read that for us?
Yes, I'll be glad to. And as we said earlier, I hope I can see it. I'm always struggling with the small type of mind in my book. Freddie Douglass. When in this finally ours, this freedom, this liberty, this beautiful and terrible thing, needful to man as air, usable as earth, when it belongs at last to all, when it is truly instinct, brain matter, the axis, sensitive, reflex action, when it is finally won, when it is more than the gaudy mumbo jumbo of politicians, this man, this Douglass, this Negro, his former slave, beaten to his knees, exiled, visioning a world unknown to his longer, non-competent, non-alien. This man, superb in love and logic, this man shall be remembered. Oh, not with scratches rhetoric, not with legends and poems and leaves of bronze alone, but with the life grown out of his life, the lives fleshing his dream of a beautiful, needful thing.
You don't write about Frederick Douglass like anybody I've ever heard. The testaments, the poems, have all characterized Douglass only in the political sense. It seems to me that you're saying more than that about, and that goes a little bit about Hayden, and that's a lot of what you believe in.
Yes, I think so, and I suppose, as a poet, I'm always trying to get on to what is human and what is fundamental. I think poetry does this. People think of poetry as being light and frivolous and spontaneous, and it's none of those things. Any man or woman who devotes a life to poetry is trying to get down to something very, very fundamental, trying, as I've said so many times before, trying to say what cannot be said. And I thought of Douglass, I saw him in the years I read about him and thought about him. I saw him as a spiritual force. And Douglass, you know, was involved in all sorts of causes. He was for woman suffrage, he was in the temperance movement, all that.
So you don't only see him as a black liberalist? So,
no, I saw him as a human being working for all of us, for human causes, for humane causes. And apparently, I must have seen him write because people like the poems. He was all the time.
You write a lot about Paradise Valley in Detroit where you grew up. One poem in particular, I think, expresses that. It's called, I believe, Winter Sundays.
Those Winter Sundays.
Sundays, too. My father got up early and put his clothes on in the blue-black cold.
Grandpa cracked hands ached from labor in the midday weather, made grandfather's blaze. No one ever thanked him. I'd wait and hear the cold splintering, breaking. for the room to warm, be calm. And slowly I would rise and dress, feeling the chronic anguish of the house, speaking indifferently to him who had driven out the cold and polished my good shoes as well. What did I know? What did I know of love's austere and lonely offer?
You know, when you talk about your career and talk about the whole city of Detroit, you know, a lot of the things that you have to choose for certain forms, one for you know, derived from your childhood, specifically where you grew up, the streets, and my environment.
Yes, it were. And as I said before, one lives in a situation, one lives in an environment. And Gordon isn't aware, really, of what the impressions that he or she is gathering always.
How do you remember this? I mean, is it romance?
It's true, as I was telling someone earlier. I don't have romantic yearning for the past. I don't have any feelings of nostalgia for the past. I miss the people. I sometimes have, I guess, a nostalgia for people that I knew and loved. And there are certain things in my childhood, certain things in my background that I cherish and that I find very interesting. But I'm aware also of certain grand realities that I had to go through. Well, I would say the fact of being poor and which in and of itself isn't all that bad, but being poor and miserable because of unhappy family situation and because of the whole color problem in the United States. But as poor people living in a certain section of Detroit and having suffered particular conditions, we have all certain idioms and certain ways of life which were a little different from those of, say, people of the same race living over on the west side of Detroit, you know? I mean, it's important to mention that. We were folk. We were folk to the folk. This is one of the poems from the series I've written called The Charges of Paradise Valley. And the people who are mentioning the poem mostly were real enough, and some of them are composites, but for the most part, the people in the poem, the characters in the poem are based on people that I knew and saw every day of my childhood and youth. And Bill, the classic actor, where is she? Who changes her frock three times a day? Where's Nora with her laugh, her common clear? Still struck Nora waiting for her chance. Where's Fast Iowa? Who so loved to dance, she left her sick bed one last time to wear and still wear the palace till she fell. Where's Magnus Alex, the ancient goddess king? Where's Smith Giving Lucy, who played a tune on her guitar? Where's Henry? Where's Melisabeth? That vanished moon, let their streets tell. Where's Jim? Why took he punch? And good old boy, who with a joke went off the couch in France. Where's Trump, the defeated artist? From Neil the Blues, daubing with quiet and red, this council of blues. Where's Rex the Huntsman? Pet-shaped chocolate, where is he? Where's Dr. Drake? Where's Stone? The shell shock, calling for us in parodies of war. Where's Taunted Christopher, sad queen of night? And Ray, who curtsied across the color line? Where's Gentle Brother David? Where's Dope Queen Mel? Let's vanish remains,
like dead streets. Speaking of dead streets, looking at Beacon Street.
Yes. That's what I had in mind when I came up with that line. Vanish room and dead streets, those streets are great, there are no people there. Not as there were when I was a boy.
Certainly, I don't think that the only landmark of your house is your street land.
The street land, yeah. That lamp shone into the front window, as I well remember, that was a big window in that old house on Beacon Street. And that lamp shone into the window of my interesting family.
Did you ever think sometimes that a part of you died with the demolition of the house?
Well, I could be dramatic and say yes, but I don't really think so. I don't really think so. I think that something that was familiar to me and dear to me ended, and something else began. I suppose in a way that the kind of both open hands on the beginning. I recall when in the early years when Hudson's built his warehouse on Beacon Street, and then I was on Bolger and other areas were torn down to make way for a power plant that a neighborhood which had been fairly cohesive, as I look back on it now, was dispersed. And the families all went different ways, and most of us never saw one another again. And that was certainly a drastic change.
Now, it was just unspeakable to jump from your house to St. Antoine's.
That's right.
Yeah, I know one of the other places specifically is in St. Antoine.
Yeah.
What were some of the things that you remember about that street in particular?
Well, I know the St. Antoine is a very colorful street. As I said before, no pun intended. It was a very lively street, there were barbershops and pool halls and restaurants and drugstores and I suppose gambling joints too, along the street. And in the summer, people used to stand out in front of the various places there and greet their friends as they passed by. It used to be said that if you wanted to find a friend that you hadn't seen for many years, all you had to do was to stand on the corner of 10th Line and Adams. Pretty soon you were bound to see your old friend. And I remember Halloween's on San Juan. People used to dress up and come out on Halloween and pray up and down San Juan. And I remember when Joe Lewis fought with Schmeling and the other. And then his other victories were celebrated on San Antoine Street. Cars went down the street and people marched through the street yelling, singing, having a good time. And it was a very colorful street.
So it's really expensive.
It was expensive. It was a very large street and it was considered by many people as a very wicked street, because gamblers and the so-called sporting class took San Antoine as its main thoroughfare.
And you mentioned the name she's called Billy Holiday.
Yes, that was later when I was grown and married. And it was about, 1940? Oh, 1940, I guess, or 41, that Billy Holiday came to sing at the crop plantation in Detroit. And I remember the Desert Rambler and I went into the Clark Plantation, which was then a hotel there on Adams, between San Antoine and Bolden. We went in to hear her sing. And I have remembered how she looked there essentially, and she was quite striking. And she, as you know, always affected a flower in her hair. And I remember her having this flower in her hair and singing in a very moving, sort of way. And she was unforgettable when she heard her and saw her. And it was very striking for her.
Not only famously, juxtaposed to everything else, was a church in St. Matthew.
Yes, St. Matthew is a beautiful church, yes. It was next to the, it was near the Chinese restaurant on Mount Antwerp, and I got the Chinese restaurant included in one of these poems, although I don't call it by the name it had. I've forgotten what it was called. It had some kind of dog name, like a pecan or something. And St. Matthew was one of the was on the old landmarks.
He was really a part of the history, I guess, connecting both to the past and what was then here.
Yes, because St. Matthew's second baptism was way back to the I guess the second baptism is older, but St. Matthew's dates back to 1890 something.
You used to also
and stack of diamonds you were made. Their croaking, rude Egyptian faces, like ten olives jasmine. Old Creole baby, dickly obelisks, scooting through cut glass box to see the macho angel trick you'd never shunned. His blue steel prowess in the rain. High chair believers, amen to that, as God of mightiest will. I thought such gaiety could not die, nor could our elegant avenger. The virgin forest by Rousseau, its psychedelic flowers pollinate, its deathless dark dream figure, death the leopard claw. I choose it now as elegy for tiger flowers.
He never seen death. It never ends at all.
Well, I doubt it because when I wrote this, I wrote this poem just two or three years ago. And I have no idea whether the title follows is alive, but I rather think it isn't.
The inspiration for much of Bob Hayden's poetry has not been solely his creation. Bob Hayden's poetry certainly can be attributed in part to the experience of having lived for over 30 years with the same person. A woman who, like Bob, is a member of the Baha'i faith, a religion which advocates the brotherhood of all humankind, a factor that certainly can be seen in all of Robert Hayden's work from Black Bottom to the present. And a person who, like Hayden himself, is a creative artist and musician, with numerous compositions to her credit. Irma Hayden certainly has been one of the main driving forces behind the man that the public has come to know as the greatest living poet, perhaps, in the United States today. Irma Hayden recently talked to me about some of the impressions that she had of the life that she and Bob had spent together.
As all of this notoriety gained from Bob's success affecting you?
Honestly, I'm happy for Bob that he has had this appointment. And then I like Washington. And it's very good to have access to the Library of Congress so that I can go into the things that have to do with music, you know, since that's my background. But as far as the Library of Congress itself is concerned, it's a wonderful honor, but it's really a lot more hard work than I thought it would be. I thought that Bob would have more time, you know, for his own work.
And you tell me something. A lot of people perceive that husband and wife combinations naturally are intermeshed in everything that they do, but both of you do things separately and do them well. You're a musician. And what are some of the compositions you've done?
Well, I've done some themes, it's called Themes for Children's Rhythms, for Children's Dance, and a suite for flute and piano, and a few songs, too, that various friends have sung, one kind of song.
And so, for 37 years, you've both been working together and separately towards your own, how can I put it?
Accomplishments. Yes,
absolutely.
Right. It's the way it ought to be.
Now, I do notice one thing about both of you. You both seem to have a lot of inner peace in your life.
Well, I haven't thought about it. But, I think the faith is one thing that does that. I mean, that's the underlying thing. But the fact that I think the fact that we're engaged in the arts, we're both, I think, very excited about discovering new things. And you can do that in the arts. You must do it. You have to have a creative approach. And the fact that there is always so much that can be done. And so many new worlds to be explored. That's probably it. It makes life exciting. And if you're excited about it,
really,
then maybe that helps with
this. Just one thing I'm going to ask you finally. You don't really disturb Bob, do you?
Not in the least. No, I
say much about a poem because poets deal in words and phrases. They tell us a lot about ourselves and tell us about the world in which we live. But for the first time that I can think of since I met Robert Hayden, I can think perhaps of words which may begin to describe him and may tell you the kind of man that he was and what impact he had on not only my life, but the lives of many other people throughout this earth. It comes from his poem about Frederick Douglass, perhaps one of the best poems written about this revolutionary hero. It talks about Frederick Douglass not as a political leader, but it gives his ideas. When it is finally ours, this freedom, this liberty, this beautiful thing. Needful to man as air, usable as earth, when it belongs to the law of all, when it is truly instinct, brain matter, disto, systo, reflex action, when it is finally one, when it is more than the gaudy mumbo-jumbo of politicians, this man, superb in love and logic, this man shall be remembered. This is Ron Scott for 56 Reports.